Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, who show is this?
And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge. I'm Anthony Irwin, joined on this fine Thursday opening day afternoon by Aaron Larsoul. Aaron,
did you forget my name?
Huh?
Did you forget my last name, sort of?
No, I didn't. I just, it has been a
day. It's been a day?
It has been a day.
As you're saying that, I'm looking to see if the final season of my Oakland A's has started yet, because I don't really, let's see.
Are you going to follow them this year?
Not particularly, but I mean, hence my question of if they are actually playing or not. Tonight against the Cleveland Indians now? That's who they're playing.
The Command? No.
No.
Guardians.
Guardians. Yeah, the Cleveland Guardians.
Yeah. The Dodgers are currently, they just got going here against the St. Louis Cardinals. The Lakers are playing some of their best basketball of the season.
Where does Shohei Ohtani's gambling addiction, where is that in the lineup? Like, Shohei is wherever, and where is his gambling addiction?
Do you have him having two spots in the lineup?
Yeah, does he have a separate? I mean, he pitches and plays in the outfield.
He won't be doing that this year,
right?
No, he won't be gambling or pitching this year.
Sure he won't be gambling?
I think at this point he's probably gonna quit that one if he was doing it. Things are going pretty well though in LA, right? Nice night. You know, the Lakers are playing there. You know, I think this is the best basketball the Lakers have played basically all year. If you aren't counting the in-season tournament and the sporadic games that those were. I think this is, you know, things are looking up in the way that they really haven't. I asked the question to Harrison yesterday, if they have turned a corner. And I tried to do the math on the air of, like, you know, who this team is and all that stuff. So we're going to be talking about that over the course of the day. We do have to start the show, however, with Shams Charania's report on Gabe Vincent potentially coming back as soon as Sunday. He still needs to rejoin the team and still needs to get his legs underneath him in terms of actual game reps and stuff like that. We'll talk about what that means for the rotation in a second. I do have to start with the reporting that I did last week on this situation, in which I said that I still believed at that time that Gabe was unlikely to come back this year. There are still people who still remain dubious to this moment. I chatted with people on my way into the studio today, sent a couple texts like,
into the studio?
Into my office, my studio. Okay.
Into the studio, like you're off site. I love it.
I have to call this my office, my studio for tax purposes.
There you go. That, yeah, of course. Yeah,
this
is
the only reason I use this room is for this. If you are listening, federal government.
IRS.
I want to start here and I want to explain some of what's gone on here.
Yeah.
I still haven't been officially wrong on this, but I am going to say this. I'm going to drop all of this. I don't like reporting on the availability of guys because the information flow is so erratic. Essentially, the way that professional teams and shoot, college teams do this to a certain extent as well. Essentially, the teams ask the player, "You good?" The player says yes or no. Team asks, "What can we do to get you good?" Player says whatever, whatever. Players usually have their own camp and doctors that they'll talk to as well. And there is just so much handling of this information, so many hands on this information, that it is damn near impossible for me to feel confident on it. And I'm just not. And I also don't want to put myself in a spot here where my information is still iffy on this entire thing. Like, maybe he plays. The last time we saw this, he played for 14 minutes and eventually needed surgery. So, like, there is not a ton of confidence on any of this. But what I don't want to do is put myself in a situation here where, because of what I've reported and because of the information that I currently have, I don't want to appear as if I am now rooting in whatever way whatsoever for this guy to not be available. As I always say, if my analysis about the Lakers is negative, I hope I'm wrong. If my reporting on a situation is negative, for one thing, it's not one way or the other. Like, it is, the information is just the information as I have it. And if it is on the side of pessimism, I hope that I'm wrong there too. And so we'll see how all of this plays out. But I will still continue to report on the locker room. I hope to, at some point, if I'm able to sit down in the same place for 15 minutes, write my latest thing for Lakers Daily, where the things I'm hearing from the locker room are really good. And I would like to I would like to report on those things, and I will continue to do that. I'll report when we get into the offseason about, like, potential trades and free agents and acquisitions and stuff like that, because that information is a little bit more concrete. But when it comes to, like, this stuff, I am hanging up my reporter cap on that. This has just not been very much fun. It has been a shitty experience, and I don't want to do it anymore. Like, it is just, it's an annoying thing. So I hope Gabe is healthy. I hope he stays healthy. I hope all of my reporting is actually wrong. I don't think it is. Just like I didn't think it was last time when Shams reported this out of nowhere, and it wound up that he was not actually, like, it doesn't appear as if he was actually ready to play basketball when he came back and tried. And we'll see how this one turns out. But that's about all I have to say on that matter. I do want to ask you, Aaron, what this means for the rotation potentially coming back, because that is the part of this that I do think people are actually interested in.
Yeah, that was quite the soliloquy there. I do not envy the job of an insider. Excuse me. I'll tell you what I know. What I know is that Gabe played 5-on-5 for the first time Monday. He was not on the trip. He still isn't on the trip. He may join the team at some point. I don't think anything that you said there is incorrect. I still don't have certainty that he's going to play Sunday or, frankly, any other time this year.
Essentially, like, what I've learned is that, like, it's just...
Let's say there are some disagreements about how ready and how close Gabe is. But, yeah, fine. Continue, please.
Yeah, here's the thing that I've kind of come to realize. Guy's going to be out there whenever he's going to be out there. I can offer up intel on what I have or whatever. And, you know, I will do that in other aspects of this thing that I cover, but, like, to be frank, it just, like, for one thing, you're dealing with HIPAA. And so, like, some of the people that you're talking to, like, literally cannot say certain things. You're dealing with people who have various, like, intentions in all of this, right? Where Gabe's camp wants him back. Gabe wants to be back. He wants to play and participate in this. I think there are some people who I've spoken to on, like, the basketball op side of things who are like, yeah, but we signed Spencer and he's playing really well, so I don't know what this is going to look like. And
yeah, but there's also the part of it that And look, nobody's inside of Gabe's body other than Gabe, but that was a weird way of phrasing it. No one knows how Gabe feels actually other than Gabe.
Yeah.
So that's part of it too. But there are people that question whether or not, like, put Spencer aside, there are people that are not sure physically if he's ready to come back. I mean, it is quite a thing. But to your other point about what the rotation looks like, I don't know, because I don't know. I haven't seen Gabe yet. I don't know what Gabe looks like. If it's Gabe at 100%, then I think that it helps, because he immediately does slot in as the best point of attack defender on the roster, or on the available roster. Yes, I think he's better than Cam at that.
Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You've got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So, are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of the MLB.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
He is also was going to be the backup point guard, a role that Spencer has now kind of fallen into and has filled well, especially defensively. He hasn't made shots yet, and he's still been a little hesitant to even take them. But that's a role that has been filled by now Spencer, with, you know, a hat tip to Austin and a hat tip to LeBron. So I don't know. We haven't seen, like, Spencer's played, I don't know what it is, you know, like 100 minutes or something this year. So, and not in several months. So I don't know what it does to the rotation. I would say the person most in jeopardy is Max, of losing a rotation spot. I think the minutes probably
first had one at really anyway.
Breaking news. The guy who was kind of in the rotation that kind of does the same thing as the guy who is coming back possibly takes his spot. So I think those rotation minutes come from Max and Cam would be my guess. I don't know if we get aggregators here. You are the aggregator. I don't know if you're going to aggregate your own show, but I'm not suggesting this is what's going to happen. It is what I suspect will happen. And it's also not what I would do, but my supposition is that if Gabe is able to come back, as the reports speculates on Sunday, that those minutes, at least at the beginning, will come from Max and Cam.
Yeah, that's essentially, and we have a super comment, which means I get to play this bad boy. Fuck Washington! Brandon Ullman writes, call me crazy, but I think the Nuggets threw the game yesterday. Also, Gabe needs to take all of Cam's minutes, so 12 to 15 minutes would be a great starting point. All right, so to the first point, I don't think they threw the game, but it is maddening to watch that team play when they aren't playing the Lakers. Because those dudes fly around defensively against the Lakers.
It was weird.
They, knock down shot. Like, it is
Jamal Murray has Jamal Murray had missed the two games previous. Mm-hmm. Everybody thought he was going to play yesterday, and then he didn't. And then it was also weird, like, SGA just randomly sat out against Houston. The Rockets. And it does sort of feel like, I don't want to necessarily call shenanigans, but it does feel like trying to manipulate the standings towards the bottom of it for OKC and Denver. They both should want the one seed. I don't know that Denver Denver probably doesn't need to care as much as OKC, but it both of them, it felt a little, I don't know, it felt odd, I guess. It felt off.
Like the way that Denver plays in non-Lakers games is just, the non-Lakers regular season games is just a sight to behold, because they're a group that like messes around as it is anyway. Like they'll mess around, like they will just kind of loaf around and then do what they have to win at the very end anyway. Yeah, that's just like how they
choke the life out of you for years. 6 minutes. Yes.
Yeah, and then but like they just won't loaf against the Lakers.
I guess my pushback though is like, if they're gonna throw the game, then why are you playing Joker?
I don't know. I mean, I think he's smart enough to throw it anyway. I don't think.
I mean, he didn't play particularly well.
No, like, but like he was getting like muscled by, who's their backup? It wasn't even Nurkic. It was the
other Nurkic guy. Nurkic Eubanks, but Nurkic wasn't playing.
Yeah, Drew Eubanks. Thank you. It was like I was watching Drew Eubanks move a freaking boulder that basically no other player in the league can move, and I'm like, that's not. Jokic, Jokic, I've seen you.
Oh, you want a full on investigation? You're gonna need Perry Mason and Matlock and Angela Lansbury, Murder She Wrote. You need all of them in Columbo. Everybody. You need everybody on the case.
I want everybody investigating why Drew Eubanks is able to move Nikola Jokic.
Die Hard.
I'm watching Anthony struggle to like get that guy to like slide an inch, and Drew Eubanks like flicks him with his pinky and the guy like moves across the paint. Shenanigans, you assholes. That's what I'm saying. But anyway, to the second point there about the 12 to 15 minutes number there for Gabe coming back. I think that's about a safe number. For one thing, you have to play this really safe, because we saw what happened last time. He played 14 minutes, had to be subbed out, and then eventually needed surgery again. So I think you have to play this extremely cautiously with this time around to make sure that you don't run into that again. And then, you know, for rotation's sake and for identity's sake, this is the other thing too. The Lakers have again found this thing where Rui starts, and you're big, right? Like across the board, you're a big team. D'Lo's a big point guard. Austin's a small shooting guard, and a small and a thin shooting guard.
He's a thin, yes. Thin, yes. Yeah. And there's an athleticism thing. But as far as just his height, I wouldn't call him small. He's not like, you know, you're definitely going to find some 6'7", 6'8 shooting guards in the NBA. But he's probably close to average. Probably
he's close to average in the way that like a lot of guys. So are you saying
he's dating profile?
I'm saying I was
5'9" claiming
at Men's Warehouse. So one of my deals at Men's Warehouse, I used to have to help with the tux rentals because I was the youngest salesperson on the floor. Mm-hmm. So I used to help with tux sales over there at Men's Warehouse, and I would do like the measurements, right? Yeah. Especially for weddings. And every guy came in who was at least an inch or two shorter than me. We'd be like, I'm 5'9". And like everybody listed themselves at 5'9". And I actually am 5'10". You have met me. I am an actual 5'9", 5'10" human being.
I have met you.
And so like, I would just kind of like chuckle, like your pants are going to be long. Like,
well, that just means you really got to get in there and measure that inseam.
I was like, are you sure you're, and it's like Austin is like league average shooting guard size in the way that those guys were actually 5'9". He's a little small.
I mean, D'Lo's probably a little bit bigger than most point guards. Austin's probably average, maybe a touch shorter than most.
Rui is huge for small forwards.
Yeah, Rui's big for three. I mean, not even so much height. He's kind of a normal height small forward. But
huge.
But his yes.
Yeah.
His weight, strength, physicality is upper tier for For small forwards, yes.
And then LeBron is LeBron, and Anthony Davis, I would say, is like average by center size or whatever.
Maybe a little bigger, but yes.
And so, like, you have like a big group, and I think the Lakers, again, as we have begged for all year, have bought back into the bigger, stronger, faster identity, right? And
I don't know about faster, but bigger, stronger, yes.
Yeah. All right. Sure. But yeah, I'm doing the Kanye
bigger,
thing.
Stronger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Though, yes. We're gonna get you on that summer workout plan too.
All right. Uh-huh. So, my concern with, and because, you know, coming off of the bench, you have Taurean, right, who's like an average sized two, you know, maybe slightly bigger than your average two, because he's a little bigger than Austin,
but he plays a lot of three.
Well, he will basically be only a three in this. If Gabe gets, you know, Cam's and Max's minutes, like, Gabe is smaller than both Cam and Max. So now you made yourself small again. And I just don't necessarily.
Gabe's the smallest guy on the team. Yes.
Yeah. And so I don't necessarily know how I feel about giving Darvin more ammunition to go small again. You know, like, that's, you know, it's kind of like we had that conversation about Spencer Dinwiddie a few weeks back about, like, was Spencer Dinwiddie a mistake? And it had nothing to do with Spencer, because I've mostly liked the Spencer Dinwiddie experience. I think he's worked his ass off defensively. Yeah, I would love for him to make a few more outside jump shots and stuff like that, but that's not really, like, if you were expecting that from Spencer Dinwiddie, you haven't really paid attention to him, especially this stage of his career. And, you know, the nice thing about Dinwiddie, he's 6'5", with really long arms, and when he goes into the game, you know, and he's playing, you know, at the two, and you have Taurean at the three, it kind of makes up for how small Taurean is by three standards, because Dinwiddie's a big two. But if you now have Gabe going out there, now you're kind of sort of small again. Gabe wasn't able to shoot earlier this year. And, you know, Spencer isn't really a floor spacer either. So now you're small, and you're only guy who's going to puncture the defense is Dinwiddie again. So I don't know. It makes me nervous to give Darvin more opportunity, or more, you know, opportunity is the right word, to kind of fall back into those bad habits. That's my biggest concern here. And you're playing good basketball.
Like, yeah. I think that's the bigger thing. And look, if Gabe can play, then you play him. I agree that Gabe is not the caliber of player, and certainly we haven't seen it this year, but just in general, I don't think Gabe is the caliber of player that you are, like, really reworking all sorts of things and uprooting stuff. I am not so worried about him him being small. That doesn't really, I'm not really worried about that. I guess if there is a concern, and I think if he's healthy, that Gabe should be out there, he should be tried. If that's 12 to 15 minutes, as, you know, the super chat suggested, I'm fine with that. But Gabe's too good to just, like, sit over there, and there's too much of an investment in him for this year and going forward, which indicates you at least thought of him as a mainstay in the rotation enough that if he's healthy, he should play. I am worried about if it uproots, you know, what is kind of a good thing going. You said the Lakers are playing the best basketball of the season. Maybe. It's been good, right? The Lakers have won 7 of 9. I think it's 5 in a row. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you, like, look behind that a little bit, it's, like, not as sterling. Look, 2 of those wins, though, if it's 7 of 9, 2 of those wins are against Milwaukee, who without LeBron in both of those games. So those are damn good wins. Indiana is okay-ish. Yeah. Indiana's been struggling, but they're okay-ish. It's, you know, it's the corpse of the 76ers. It's the backups to the backups to the backups of the Memphis Hustle, you know, their G League team last night. So it's not exactly a murderer's row of competition, but also not the Lakers' fault. You can only hate who's on the schedule. So I do think that, you know, look, and from what you're seeing, and I think LeBron is kind of a harbinger, a bellwether of what the vibes are like. And I don't know if you saw LeBron's Instagram post. LeBron was, you know, talking about, I think he had a couple pictures of the lob that Austin threw him, and then it's something in the caption about, you know, let's keep it going on to the next one. So it looks like that would indicate, and what you were saying you were going to write for Lakers Daily whenever you can take a breath and sit down, is that the vibes are pretty good in the locker room and around the team. So I don't think Gabe's going to interrupt that. I do think the vibes are pretty good. I do think the team is playing reasonably well. And so I would be a little bit wary about kind of upsetting that. But I don't know that if Gabe comes back and plays 12, 15, 17 minutes, and that's mostly coming from Max and Cam, I'm not so worried about it. Although, again, to be fair, I'm not as high on this stretch of basketball. Yes, the Lakers have won 7 of 9, and yes, you can only play who's in front of you. But if you like dive into it a little bit and the competition, again, outside of the Bucks, which those are two very impressive wins. Outside of the Bucks, the other five wins are kind of, I guess.
Well, it's not even about like who they're playing. Like March basketball is just in the NBA is always really. You have a lot of teams that have kind of closed up shop, right?
Yes.
If they are on the peripheries of contention, so like the bad teams are now really bad teams, right?
Yes.
And then you have like good teams, like, you know, the teams that are at the very top of your conference
that don't need it,
going through the motions to make sure that they're, you know, so yep. March basketball in general is kind of fluky. But yes. I'll say this though.
Well, to be fair though, the next three, I think it's the Nets, Wizards and Raptors, or Nets, Raptors, Wizards. Yeah. So like, it's not it's not a murderer's row coming either. This is not the 90s Bulls, the 2017 Warriors and 2000, 2001 Lakers coming up on the schedule either.
But like what I'll say though, is that like, even granting the disclaimer about the caliber of teams that the Lakers are playing well against, it's the way that they're doing it, Aaron. It's the identity. It's the, like, how many times do you think if I had to actually put an over under on the number of times that you and I have spoken and I have mentioned the identity that I desire for this team, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how many times, like, you and I do a show weekly.
Mm-hmm.
We've probably done about, we'll say, 30 shows over the course of the season to this point. Over under 27 and a half times, like, episodes that I have mentioned at some point, please, this is the identity that you guys need to be leaning into.
Yeah, kind of though, because so Lakers fans, and you are among them, and people that cover the team and people even that work for the team have kind of been clamoring for the bigger, faster, stronger. It's not faster anymore, but at least bigger, stronger, kind of the bully ball Lakers that won the title in 2020, and have been asking for, you know, not AD exclusively at the five, playing him sometimes at the four with now Jackson Hayes, but before it was, you know, Christian Wood, or even people such as yourself who had been asking for LeBron, AD, and Rui in the front court, even if it wasn't starting, playing more over. So yes, however, this identity is not, it is that, right? The Lakers are a big basketball team. At least the starting five is now very big. But this is an offensive group, and that is not what it was. It was big and bruising and impossible to score on, you know, and Dwight and AD and LeBron and Caruso and KCP and Kuz and Danny Green, et cetera, and Rondo, et cetera. And it was big and physical and mean and imposing, but that was a defensive thing. And this is not that. The Lakers, I think, are second in the NBA second or third in the NBA since Rui has been inserted into the starting lineup in offensive efficiency. The defensive efficiency has tumbled. Why? Anthony Davis is a two-way player. He's an excellent defensive player. He's a good or very good offensive player. LeBron can be excellent on both sides, but he often isn't because his energy and effort is not there defensively. Rui's an offensive guy. Austin's an offensive guy. D'Lo's an offensive guy. So, yeah, it is like technically that identity, but the Lakers have turned into recently a team that's going to outscore people, right? 136, I think it was, on the Hawks. Beat the Pacers on, 150 to 145, I think, in a regulation game.
Yeah, right? They have like this 20
scored 100
worst defense in the league since the All-Star break.
Yeah, so yes, like, but part of it is like, be careful what you wish for. 136, you know, last night, 128 against the Bucks, although that was in double overtime. So I don't know. That kind of makes me a little concerned also. It makes me feel a little better because I suspect in the play-in games and then presumably, hopefully, in the playoffs, LeBron would lock in defensively and would have the effort defensively, possession to possession, night to night, which would make up for some of that. Rui's just not going to guard anybody, period. Austin's not going to guard anybody. Austin's okay. D'Lo's not going to guard anybody, period.
Yeah.
Right? So I don't know. I see what you're going for, right? The bigger, stronger, like intimidating that we've seen the Lakers at their best moments, even earlier this season, and then obviously last year, and then going back with Frank Vogel and winning the title. But those teams had a defensive identity that this Lakers team in this iteration doesn't have presently.
Yeah, the defense is like definitely concerning, right? Like, I considered it an almost like moral loss when they gave up 145 points to the Pacers. I was not thrilled coming on.
After
that game. What I'll say though is that like this is still, even granting what you're talking about, I'm not disagreeing. This is still the best version of what the Lakers can be. You know, like this is the like there isn't an identity that the Lakers can pursue that would make them better than this.
With the current people available, I agree with that. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, yeah, if Vando was available, which, you know, maybe as you get closer to the playoffs, maybe. What was funny about the Vincent thing, I was told that Vincent was further than Vando. And then all of a sudden, Vincent is available. I don't know, man. The way that all of this is going
All of a sudden, Vincent may be available a few days from now.
Yeah, right. But anyway. Yeah, like if Vando, you know, becomes available, then the Vincent thing doesn't matter. Like Vando should get all of those minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I guess with how well Spencer has played defensively.
Yeah.
I mean, again, that's contingent on
right now than Gabe Vincent. Like,
how would we have any? No, look, Spencer isn't better than the last version. Vincent, but like Gabe Vincent. Spencer Dinwiddie now is not better than Gabe Vincent in the playoffs last year. No,
sure,
specifically.
But the five games that we saw from Vincent this year, he's better than that guy.
Sure, you might be better than that guy.
I don't think so. I'm like,
I mean, Vando might be better than him now also, and he isn't healthy.
Yeah. So I think though that like I love the way that like, so Zach Cram of The Ringer actually put together a really good article today detailing why the Lakers shoot so many fewer free throws than everybody else. It is still a little iffy, like how, like the extent to which they're shooting, but it explains it right. The Lakers give up more open three-pointers. They focus on taking away the rim much more than they focus on giving up three-pointers. That means that those other teams are going to be taking shots from areas on the court where fouls take place a lot, you know, less regularly.
Wait, you just said why the Lakers shoot fewer free throws. Then you're saying why the Lakers give up fewer free throws is what you're saying.
No. I'm saying like the discrepancy, like the overall discrepancy.
Yeah, and, so of the like, opponent, so it's like, of it's the Lakers it's shooting more is what you're saying.
What are the Lakers shooting more free throws? Yes, you started by saying why the Lakers shoot fewer free throws.
So the reason that the Lakers shoot so many more free throws than everybody else,
is that
they give up more. They take away shots on the court that fouls occur on more regularly, and they shoot from areas on the court that they get fouled at more regularly. And then
the answer is Anthony Davis. The answer to that question is Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis plays a drop, takes away the rim, is very good at taking away the rim without fouling. Other teams are afraid of Anthony Davis, so they stay away from the paint where you get fouled more often. Teams are encouraged to drive less against the Lakers because of how they play defense and Anthony Davis. And Anthony Davis does a lot of his work offensively in the paint. LeBron gets to the rim a lot, even though he doesn't get as many fouls called for him as he should.
Yeah.
But yes, there's your answer.
That's what's been so funny about this whole like conversation about the free throw discrepancy is like Lakers fans are like, actually, they should be shooting more.
It's the wildest thing. There was all this time, right, where in the NBA.
And
was,
I don't disagree, by the way. I'm like, I watched them play. It takes LeBron getting mauled by a bear.
You have to pull a knife and you can't just shank him. You have to like actually leave the knife in before.
It has to be a Sam Bowie knife. It can't be like a shiv. It has to be like a giant like a.
It can't be something like somebody melted a toothbrush down in their prison cell. It has to legitimately like the Rambo knife that.
Yeah, it has to be. It has to be like a full on like. You know, Japanese sword, like katana. Like it has
I've been wondering this because there's been this talk about how whether a scoring is down. I mean, that's not their talk about it, but of whether or not it's the referees and, you know, fewer fouls are being called and whether there was a mandate to do so after the All-Star break. And so I've been like digging into this and I have not figured this out yet. But it's wild because like physically they're two incredibly different styles of player and their size is incredibly different. But do you remember the time in the NBA where there was this thing where everybody would roll their eyes because the superstars, like if you breathed on a superstar, they would get anything called. Jordan got whatever called, any superstar. LeBron James and Steph Curry have been the face of the NBA for like 15 straight years. And the two of them get the worst whistle in the league. And it's like, it's fascinating to me.
I watch like Warriors games and Pods gets a better whistle than
Steph.
Why? Like he's on his team. That doesn't make any sense.
Steph and LeBron have the two worst whistles in the league. And then and they are the only dudes that matter.
I think AR's whistle came down to earth a little bit, but last year he was getting a better whistle than LeBron. And I'm like,
yes,
what is going on?
There was a time. I think there was like the first 2 weeks or so. It was right around this time last year. I think it was the first 2 or 3 weeks in March where AR was shooting like 13 free throws a game and had taken the most free throws in the month, like up until the latter parts of last March. I mean, good for AR. I mean, he sells it a little bit, but good for him. He should.
A little grifty. Let's get to some of these super comments that have been piling up a little bit. Shouts to everybody for sending these as often as you guys do. I greatly, greatly appreciate it. Going to put Avery through donut school. So first one, best donut case scenario. Donut school.
I want to go to donut school. That sounds delicious.
Fuck Washington!
Best case scenario for seeding. I guess the best realistic case scenario, I think, is that, like, I don't think you're getting to the sixth seed. No. I think that's gone.
No.
But eight could happen.
Yeah, eight. I mean.
You ever watch Angels in the Outfield?
No. That sounds like white people shit. No.
Well, for one thing, the kid who used to say this was a little black kid. But you go, like. It could happen, you know, because he's like trying, like, they're just, like,
No. I don't know. You're saying, you know, he does know. No. I don't know. I don't know the premise of this. I don't know a single actor or
Angels
actress
in the
this.
All right. So Angels in the Outfield is a movie about the actual, back then they were the Anaheim Angels.
Right.
I think they were the California Angels, one of them.
Okay.
And it was, you know, at a time where sports movies were still being made and put out into the theater.
Sports movies suck.
And in this one, like actual angels were helping the California Angels.
Okay.
So you had all kinds of crazy shit going on all over the field.
Like, and it was carrying the ball over the fence. Angels,
in one case, they were carrying a human being to be able to catch it. There was one where, this fat catcher ran for a triple because an angel was helping him run.
Why do all of these movies you talk about that are white people stuff? What was the Ducks one? Mighty Ducks, the hockey one. Why do these all come from teams in Anaheim? Has there been an investigation to this yet?
I think it's Disney.
Makes sense. Yeah.
There's two main characters. Actually, Joseph Gordon-Levitt is the main character in this one. Jason Gordon-Levitt.
I don't know
who is the main character from this. And then his best friend.
Is he in something I should have seen recently?
The Batman movies. Who's gonna be Robin?
In the trilogy, the Batman Begins and all those ones. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Got it. Yep.
He's like the main character of this. He's a foster kid. And then in this foster home, his best friend is this little black kid. Mm-hmm. And the little black kid's like favorite phrase is "it could happen." And so I'm saying it could happen. You know, could happen.
I mean, last night didn't help. I think the Mavs are too far gone at this point. And the Kings are too far gone, especially because of the tiebreaker sort of thing, and they're like kind of too far ahead anyway. I think
Phoenix slips further.
Yeah, I think eight is possible. As I said, last night didn't help, but the Lakers, in a weird twist of fate, have the tiebreaker over the Suns due to the 3-2 record. They played five times this regular season. They
played 75 games against them this
year. Due to the 3-2 record the Lakers have against the Suns. The Lakers have the tiebreaker.
Do you think Harrison will ever shut up if the reason the Lakers get to the eight spot is because of the in-season, the extra game they played against the Phoenix Suns in the in-season tournament?
I actually need that. I need it. That's so good. I want them to tie. All of the
whining that I've done, that's
I want them to. I want them to tie and have it be three. It'd be like the old first round. It's like the Lakers win the 5-game series 3-2. Like the Nuggets beating the Sonics.
It's what I deserve. Honestly,
Kemba Mutombo laying at the free throw line in those.
I hope Harrison is listening or watching right now, because it's definitely what I deserve. All right,
Look, we know how this is gonna go, and how this is gonna go is Lakers 9, Warriors 10. I guess I would give the Lakers a 15-20% chance of getting to eight. But the Suns are the only option. And as I said, like last night hurts, because that's when you reasonably say the Suns are gonna lose. Really, I mean, is it Minnesota? They have a rough schedule.
They have the hardest Minnesota schedule left in the NBA.
Yeah, I saw something the other day that did I say this? I don't know if I said this on Playback or if I said it somewhere else, but as of a couple days ago, the Suns had the hardest, however many games it was left, 10 or 11, the hardest 10-game finish to a season in NBA history, other than the 2015-16 Memphis Grizzlies, who in their last 10 games had to play the 73-win Warriors twice? and the 67-win Spurs twice.
Yeah, they have a brutal stretch. Tom Haberstroh, actually, for his Substack, I believe, is actually thinking that the Suns might actually fall out of the playoff race entirely because of what's left on their schedule.
And get caught by Houston, you mean?
Yeah.
Get caught by the Lakers, the Warriors, and Houston.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Brandon Omeng, again, with another one, which means... Stop watching! He's pointing out that Spencer Dinwiddie is defending. Look, the way that he's defending is actually like it's a bigger story than I think it has been to this point. When he first got to the Lakers, Dinwiddie, he was fouling a bunch. And I actually liked it because it felt to me like he was trying to get back into a defensive rhythm. Like he was literally like playing defense in a way that he hadn't played in a while. And that's why he was doing so much fouling. Ooh, Mookie Becks just went deep. I don't know what you're talking about.
It's this sport that just
what happens? You know. what do they do?
Use a stick. They hit a ball really far. Oh. But yeah, I think Dinwiddie, like I said, it makes this Gabe return that much more kind of tricky, especially if Vando comes back, because I really like Vincent as your third guard in a short playoff rotation. And I don't know where Vincent would fit in.
Dinwiddie, you like as a third guard.
Yeah, Dinwiddie I like as the third guard in a short playoff rotation. I don't like Vincent missing an entire year trying to fit into that group.
So I saw in the super comment and the super chat, sorry, or super comment, whichever it is, which we always love. And thank you for those, you know, that he's played. Dinwiddie's played really good defense and is shooting 39%. He's shooting, I don't know, like 2.5 or 3 threes a game. Yeah. So like, it doesn't matter.
The shooting, I don't care about.
He shot 32%. He shot 32% in Brooklyn on whatever, something like 6 a game. So he's okay. He's a volume guy. He's used to having the ball in his hands a lot more and being able to run pick and roll a lot more than he has been with the Lakers. He's a good offensive player. He's not a knockdown shooter. That 39% is... No one in the NBA cares that he shot 39% on...
Yeah.
2.8 attempts or whatever it is since he's been a Laker.
I agree. All right, we have one more to go here before we touch on the final topic of the show. Fuck Washington! Winston McCarthy writes, the thing that makes this important readings is Lakers would lose to mediocre teams throughout.
Though hoping areas through hop... well, Winston sent the money in New Zealand dollars. So
I don't know what that.
Although
means.
English should be the first language, or could be the first language, there should be.
But I think the point that they're making is that essentially, you know, it's nice to see the Lakers actually taking care of business. Ooh, and now Freddie Freeman just went deep with Shohei Ohtani on base. That top of the lineup is just
did Shohei Ohtani. Have that he would reach base in his own parlor. Okay, yeah.
excuse me, but yeah, I think
Shohei Ohtani was betting on unders for Jontay Porter.
You just need to hop on the bandwagon, man. Like with hop what? On the betting bandwagon. With the Dodgers.
I am no.
All right. No. All right. So the last thing I wanted to talk about though with this team here is who they are. Like I'm trying to figure this out. All year, the larger sample size would indicate that they are a mediocre basketball team.
Mm-hmm.
Lately, and since they have started playing their best basketball players, wild and like crazy thing that that a coach could potentially do is playing his best players. They are a significantly better basketball team. And I don't know how to do the math on that because normally you listen to the larger sample size. But if the larger sample size is involving guys who don't make any sense playing together, and then the smaller sample size is sustainable moving forward because those guys can continue to play together, then I would probably lean towards the smaller sample size without even addressing my own biases, right? I want to believe that they are a better team, but I, you know, this is one of those classic believe what you want about it. So what mm-hmm. what do you believe? Who do you think the Lakers are?
I think the Lakers are closer to this team than they were to that team. I think the Lakers are mediocre, right? The Lakers have been better and are still like in dogfights against a lot of teams that aren't any good. Got their asses kicked by Minnesota and the Warriors recently. You know, had to struggle in a dogfight in the fourth against, again, Tyrese Maxey and the Miracles with the 76ers. I do think that, look, I think the thing that has most held the Lakers back
is inefficiency in rotations and playing the right guys the right amount and in the right combinations. I think that is demonstrably better. And I think that is something going forward that you can try to hang your hat on. My fear, though, as I mentioned earlier, is this team has swung way too far offensively, and it's just asking too much of AD defensively. the teams that win, you know, like, look at the best teams in the NBA. We all hate the Celtics. I hate the Celtics as much as anybody here. But the Celtics have been really, really, really good. The reason why is because their best five or six or seven offensive players are their best five or six or seven defensive players. They don't have to make that trade-off. That was the secret to all those dominant Warriors teams. That was the secret, or not a secret, but that's how the Nuggets were last year, right? Joker and Jamal Murray became good enough defensively that they weren't a problem, and you could have KCP out there. Michael Porter Jr. started to sort of get out of his own way. So my fear with the Lakers is they have too many offensive guys, and when they're going to play their best guys, they're just offensive guys, right? They have some defensive guys, but those guys are so bad offensively that they can be really problematic to leave on the floor, especially in a playoff scenario. Vando got played off the floor a lot last year in the playoffs. Cam Reddish is not a good offensive player. He's a decent defensive player, not a good offensive player. So AD fine on both ends. LeBron, I trust on both ends in the playoffs. I don't trust him night to night defensively in the regular season, but in the playoffs, I would. Rui's not going to guard enough. D'Lo's not going to guard enough. Austin, you hope for. So I do think that the optimization of lineups, who should be playing and how much, has gotten significantly better. And I do think that is something that you can hang your hat on going forward that I don't think is like going away. I understand your concern about giving Darvin enough chess pieces that he'll play too small again. I do understand that concern, but I do think I don't think it's a fluke that the Lakers have been better and that the rotations are better. And I think that will continue, but I don't think the Lakers have enough two-way guys to be really anything other than maybe a little better than mediocre, like, on balance.
Yeah, I have them, like, I think they're better than the other teams in the play-in tournament currently. Like, I think they are the best of those four teams currently.
I think this is fascinating because it's the Lakers and because it's the Warriors and because it's the Suns. We'll put Sacramento or Dallas, like, out of it for now. I am fascinated by when people say that or when you say that. And by the way, I think there's an argument you can make for any of those teams to be the best of the group. When you're saying that, are you saying that you think they can consistently be a pretty good version of themselves, or you think they have the highest ceiling? Because I think those are two very different conversations.
Oh, no. I think those other teams might have higher ceilings. I just think that those teams have to do a lot more to reach their ceilings.
So to paraphrase what you're saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're saying you think the Lakers can get to their B game more regularly than, or can or will get to their B game more regularly than the Warriors or Phoenix. But I think Phoenix and the Warriors' A game is better than the Lakers' A game.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is that the Warriors and the Suns' A games are better than the Lakers.
But the Lakers will get to their B more often.
Their A game more often.
Oh, got it.
And that their B game is not as bad as, or I guess their like C or D game isn't as bad as Golden State or Phoenix's C.
I think that's fair.
Because I think those teams rely so heavily on shooting, you know, and I think
the question, though, is in a one game, like, that matters more if you can get to a series. What the Lakers have matters more if you can get to a 7-game series.
Yeah.
In a one or two off, that's scary.
Yeah. The variance is certainly terrifying. I would prefer not to have to go through Golden State and Phoenix to even get into the playoffs.
Oh, God. Hey, want to go to the playoffs? Beat Steph at home,
dude. Imagine
beat Steph at home, and then go beat KD and Book in Phoenix.
Or yeah, don't and go then to the playoffs. And then on top of that, by the way, you might have to like your reward for that is the Nuggets if they're able to get the top.
Well, that's why I think it was interesting the Nuggets and OKC seemingly both jockeying not only for who is going to be 1, 2, and 3. You put Minnesota in there because Minnesota hasn't fallen off the face of the earth yet, as I kind of thought they would. It seems like they're jockeying up there and trying to manipulate, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10. Yeah.
Well, it's also funny because, like, I would rather not see Golden State in Phoenix in the play-in, but the other team that we aren't talking about here is the Kings, and they have smacked the Lakers up and down the court all year this year.
I'm not sure I want much of Dallas either.
Well, Dallas.
I think Dallas are frauds, but you want to see Luka and Kyrie in a one game? No, thank you.
I mean, look, man, the West is fucking insane.
As poorly as the Lakers have played against the Kings in recent memory, I'm still taking the Kings. Best case scenario for the Lakers is the Kings are 7 and 8 is the Lakers are 8, the Kings are 7, and the Lakers get to go and beat the Kings one, because the Kings are frauds. As much as they have given the Lakers all kinds of problems recently, and as much as Austin and D'Lo are not going to guard Malik Monk and De'Aaron
I'm more
Fox.
Nervous about Sabonis and what he seems to do to AD. I don't like how that looks every time they play against him.
I don't care for that either. And that would still be give me a one game, get to beat Sacramento and go to the playoffs. I prefer that. I want no part of Luka, KD, Steph, Clay, Book, none of that.
Yeah. Well, dude,
you have a choice. I mean, there's no choice.
Who is the team that who you look at and you're like, all right, I can't wait for that. Even if the Lakers, by the way, were like a 4 seed, I would look at a lot of these teams and be like, this kind of sucks.
It sucks for all of them. What do you mean if you're looking at
the East and I'm like, dude, is that Mother Mary the Blind? They aren't even in the NBA. Like, what are we doing?
All right, look, Matt. How fun of it is if you're OKC that has never done any of this before, and you're like, we're the young upstarts. We got the 1 seed. Here's LeBron and AD for the series. You're probably the underdogs.
Right.
Here's Steph and Draymond and Clay. You're probably the underdogs. Congratulations on your 1 seed.
These teams are fighting, scratching and clawing to make sure that they don't that they get to enjoy the 7 or the 8 seed. Your reward for winning that game is the reigning champions, probably. Like, this is just the West.
I'll take the Pelicans or the Clippers. I mean, Sacramento is the team. I think Sacramento is the worst of all 10 of them.
Yeah.
But I'll take.
I mean, in terms of matchup, I would like to play the Thunder. I like the way that the
Lakers are 3-1 against the Thunder this year.
All right. That is going to do it here for this episode of the Lakers Lounge. Thank you very much, Aaron, for hopping on with us. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. It is a random Thursday afternoon. We have 630 people just chatting with us here. Please do
on the YouTube. Oh, excellent.
Please do hit that subscribe button. Please do, if you are listening in podcast form, please subscribe wherever you get your podcast, preferably on Odyssey. Follow me on Twitter at Anthony Irwin LA, or follow Aaron on Twitter at Aaron Larsoul. And the next time you guys hear from me will be, my parents are in town, so I don't think I'm going to do a happy hour tomorrow.
I've heard about how your dad fan. That's why you're a Laker fan the way you are a Laker fan. So I would imagine.
Should I have my dad in the happy hour? Should I bring him on?
Yes, yes, yes.
He would.
Totally, I would imagine Pops has some really takes
problematic, and then there goes all of everything that we've been building.
just shut the whole thing down.
So until the next time you guys hear from
you're going to have to do a Friday news dump for this, your apology.
I'm going to do a notes app apology. I'm sorry for bringing
what
on
what font are you going to use?
Not Comic Sans. For the next time you guys hear from me, I'm Anthony Irwin. That was Aaron Larsoul, and we will check you guys out on Sunday probably.